We talk often about crime, programs to fight crime, programs to help various neighborhoods in the city of Chicago. And one of the portions of that problem that gets talked about a lot is what's going on with young people, young people who feel that they need more resources, or that they just need to know that there's a real future out there for them. It is part of the problem that gets discussed. We've talked to a number of organizations that are attempting to remedy these deficits. There was an article this August, about a week ago, in Washington Monthly magazine. Police need to do a better job with young people. Shelley Jackson and Lisa Thoreau wrote it, and they talk about some of the things that can make these interactions better on and things that need to happen on both sides of this equation. Lisa Thoreau joins us now to talk about this. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Joan. I appreciate it.
So let's first talk about the police side of the equation. What do police need to do their jobs better, particularly with young people?
Well, I want to make clear that there are law enforcement officers across the United States doing good things with many young people, but there are some law enforcement officers who would benefit from being equipped with training that is developmentally appropriate, trauma-informed, and equitable for interactions with youth, and we believe that policies that guide and better the discretion of law enforcement officers would also be useful. Right now, I think most officers get less than 6 hours in the academy on how to work with teenagers, and it's all really a focus on law, not about how to communicate, not about how to recognize what's going on and de-escalate or avoid escalating situations. And our goal as an organization is to make sure that interactions between youth and officers is resulting from the benefits of being trained and equipped with these policies to make sure the best outcomes happen for young people.
Are the techniques of de-escalation different for interacting with a young person than an adult?
Generally not, but in some ways, yes. One of the key points is that young people may not process information at the same speed. They may not understand what's going on. They may be more motivated by fear and just the nature of being young, in which one part of your brain is overriding that part of your brain that we would like to see a break, that puts a break on the more impulsive part of your brain. And so understanding that you have to really pause with young people, think through how you're presenting information, what your body language, your verbal language, and your timing is, what we call the BLT, is a bit more age-appropriate and developmentally appropriate is key. It's also key to avoid escalating situations.
You start this article that you and Shelley Jackson have written in Washington Monthly by talking about the teenager who recorded the death of George Floyd. Talk about that.
Well, here we are talking about a young woman who is 17, a teenager, right? And she recognized that what was happening between law enforcement in Minneapolis and George Floyd was wrong and caught it on tape. And it is that tape which has prevented people from denying that uses of force can sometimes be absolutely incorrect, unconstitutional, and unjustified. It is really worth noting that in Minneapolis, the kind of chokehold that was used on George Floyd had also been used on a 14-year-old, and due to that department's problems with oversight, it's in it, total dysfunction in oversight. No action had been taken against Derek Chauvin when he had put a 14-year-old who was compliant in a chokehold. And so it's really important that this was caught and that it led to other investigations, because what we find across the country is that it is rare that we listen to what's happening to kids. The best way kids can get any kind of redress for what's happened to them that appears really out of whack, it's excessive, it's unreasonable, is for them to find an attorney to bring a misconduct case. And I say this having watched this in different cities over 20 years now. So what we're hoping is that we can do something that serves both young people and law enforcement officers and agencies. Right now, law enforcement agencies assume officers will use common sense when they interact with youth. That's not always working, as we can tell from some of the resulting lawsuits that we have seen across the country for unreasonable and excessive use of force. And just as everyone else who works with kids is highly regulated, and I'm talking everyone from teachers to doctors, we think officers who interact with youth should at the very least, be trained to work with them and should also have policies that require them to treat youth differently than they treat adults, and not for agencies to simply rely on the common sense of officers. I think this is something that everyone should embrace because it protects everybody. It protects youth, it protects individual officers, and it protects agencies, as well as the taxpaying public, which has had to make many expenditures for agencies' reliance on the common sense of an officer who may not have understood you can't use such extreme tactics with a child.
You've talked about training and how certain kinds of de-escalation training are very important, and I couldn't agree more. Part of the consent decree that Chicago is operating under requires that training be updated. Part of the problem, from what little I know about the situation and what I've read about it, is that where do you find the correct kind of training? There's all kinds of people out there who are doing all different kinds of trainings for police forces. As a matter of fact, one of them came to light post George Floyd, that this former cop was basically doing these like military boot camps. That's how, and he had contracts with various police departments, and you combined a sort of a military attitude with some of the U.S. government military equipment that's being sold off to police departments, and it would seem you would have a recipe for disaster. It would seem you would be setting up an us versus them mentality.
Well, that was a wonderful example of a terrible recruitment method for training. But I don't understand why most law enforcement agencies don't seem to be particularly interested in training their officers how to work with youth. We started off working in 2 states. Now we're working in 25. But it's still only some of the most unusual chiefs and some of the chiefs who have endured lawsuits who ask us to come in and work with their officers. I don't understand why the feds aren't even focusing on how to train law enforcement to work with youth on a wide variety of topics so that we can do all sorts of things, not just reduce use of force against youth, but drive down some of the extraordinary and enduring racial disparities in arrest rates. I don't understand why this is not being logistically or, you know, systematically examined at the federal level to support state and local law enforcement agencies. But that's something we do as a training organization, and the policies we're looking forward to releasing in October will suggest what such training should include. We include a lot of that in our Policing the Brain training and our Policing the Teen Brain and School training, and you can find information on those trainings on our website, strategiesforyouth.org, because we feel we must ground officers in an understanding that the teen brain, which is the the age at which most young people are going to be arrested or go into the juvenile justice system really perceives, processes, and responds differently. And we have to equip officers to understand that and adjust their approaches with young people differently. This is all the more important, I might add, when we're looking at racial disparities, because there have been some very important studies showing that we tend to, as college students or police officers, age up youth of color. So we may look at a 12-year-old boy, and on average, according to this study called The Essence of Innocence, the boy may look like a 15-year-old to us, typically 4.5 years older than he is. And if you hold the 12-year-old to the expectations of a 15 or 16-year-old, 16 or 17-year-old, you're going to have problems. The key thing about trainings, though, is that we have to have officers recognize what's normative and how an arrest is more likely to exacerbate those behaviors than decrease them. And there are skills we can train officers with. I know this because I have had the honor of working with really outstanding officers who want to make arrest a matter of last resort and who want a young person to leave an interaction with an officer respecting the interaction, believing that the system is working as it should, justly and fairly for them, too.
One of the things that has confused me, and I haven't really gotten a good answer from anybody, part of the, well, the Chicago consent decree has been very slowly implemented. That's been one of the big complaints under the former chief of police, that that it just wasn't, you know, we had certain things we knew we had to do, and we just didn't seem to be able to get around to them. A big part of that was to upgrade the training. And I'm thinking to myself, how hard is that? You know, you see, okay, we need training in use of force. What training is out there? What companies are out there? What's their philosophy? What fits best with our police department? And then let's bring them in. Let's hire them. I don't understand what is so hard about that. Can you explain to me why something like this is so difficult to actually get done?
I don't understand it either, but I would infer that if you don't have a clear vision of what you want the training to accomplish, then it's hard to choose among training companies. That is what I think is going on. And one of the things that strikes me is that our model is to go in and conduct an assessment with an agency's officers and with community members and youth, and to understand how these interactions are going. And we often ask officers, the chiefs, to prepare a vision of how they want to see law enforcement interactions with youth, and they very rarely will do that for us. And until they can articulate a vision of how these things should go, how these interactions should go, it's going to be hard for them to choose training corporations that address that image and will help implement it. The other thing I think that's happening is in cities like Chicago, which are considering revising its policies, or Minneapolis, or just recently Cleveland and Baltimore, it's going to be much more effective to train with policies that address how to interact youth. And it's still a minority of law enforcement agencies that have a robust set of policies that instruct law enforcement officers what to do in the many, many circumstances in which they're likely to encounter youth. And that's why we're releasing these policies in October, because we think this is a need and a gap that must be filled if we're going to move the needle towards progress and stop seeing some of the more disturbing, excessive and unreasonable uses of force against kids.
I'm talking to Lisa Thoreau along with Shelley Jackson. They serve in senior roles at Strategies for Youth. That's a national nonprofit that works, as you can hear from what Lisa's been saying, it works on improving the interactions between police and young people. They focus particularly on youth of color. They want to reduce unnecessary arrests, and they want to make sure that force is only used appropriately. They've written an article about this in Washington Monthly. Lisa and I are going to continue this discussion right after a break.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter. Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
Lisa Thoreau is at Strategies for Youth. It's an organization, a nonprofit, that tries to improve the way police and young people interact with one another. We've talked a lot about different things that could improve things from the police side of the equation. Are there community programs or organizations or educational programs that should be in schools that would might work on the youth side of this equation, Lisa?
Absolutely. We see a wealth of programs mushrooming across the nation lately to help young people imagine how to navigate these interactions, as well as how to find ways of decreasing social distance between law enforcement officers and youth. And they're very imaginative, and some are led by youth in Newark. I'm thinking of the TAPS Academy in Houston. I'm thinking of all sorts of programs across the U.S. that are often brought together, have brought together young people and officers. My problem with them is that, yep, it's fun to get together with 20 officers in a regular classroom where everything is set and steady. The true test, though, is how officers act out on the street. So if your programs are your only effort to systematically train officers and provide them guardrails through policies about how to interact with youth, that's insufficient. That is meaningless, really, in the broader scheme of things. So while we think these programs can be useful, they are not getting to the core issue, which is structural, which requires that officers, just as they've been required to understand how to deal with domestic violence or sudden death syndrome or other issues that are unique, that officers as a group and law enforcement agencies as structures need to address how to best interact with youth through training and policies, since youth under the age of 19 are 1/6 of the American population. This serves everybody, because there's nothing like a bad interaction to sour future interactions between a person and law enforcement. That doesn't help anyone. It's a waste of an opportunity. We offer a program called Juvenile Justice Jeopardy, in which we explain how you can avoid getting into legal jeopardy. We can explain to young people what their rights are, but also what their legal obligations are, because in the United States we focus so much on what people's rights are, we often don't warn them of some of the risks they may be taking with their behavior. And I'll just give you a quick example of how we're trying to do this with young people through our Jeopardy games, and these are also in like 23, 24 states around the country. When I'm hanging out with friends, which is what teenagers do, it is critical in their normative development that they bond with peers and find satisfaction and appreciation and validation through peers. If I do things with my peer group, because I don't want to lose face, and because this is part of my normative growth, I have to be very careful about what I am allowing myself to be talked into. And we so often see kids thinking, well, I wasn't doing anything. I was just the lookout. And it was my friend who did the bad thing. Or it was my friend who put the gun in the car. It was my friend who put the drugs there or whatever. They don't understand that most states' laws will treat the person who is in a very passive role, who may have been there because they needed the peer validation or whatever, as guilty as the principal, an active person who caused harm. And just watching young people's faces light up and say, oh my God, I've been taking so many risks, I really have to be careful, is quite a statement about how little we're explaining how the juvenile justice system works and how kids can get caught up in it. And it seems unfair to have all these kind of invisible trip lines out there and not actively be educating young people about how to avoid harming their potential opportunities in the future.
We have a couple of callers who have questions for you. Pam is calling from the west side of Chicago. Hey, Pam, you're on with me and Lisa Thoreau from Washington Monthly Magazine. Go ahead with your question.
Hello to both. And, John, I appreciate the discussion, but I'm really concerned when we talk about training. I've always said from the very onset with the issue of the police department, training is only a small portion. And the reason I say that, because these officers, they don't relate to white youth like they relate to black youth. They don't relate to the youth on the north side or in the loop like they relate to the youth on the south and west sides of Chicago. And for me, that specifically speaks to race. So my concern, Joan, is always, and I guess I'm going to phrase it delicately, because when I say we need to do something about removing the racist officers from the force and having some mechanism in place during the employment process to kind of detect any issues like that, maybe you just have certain officers that have problems with black youth, if that makes it more, I guess,
Well, you know, Pam, the kind of one of the things that is kind of related to what you're talking about is it's been suggested that if there was more recruitment from the Chicago neighborhoods, if there were more black and brown officers, that maybe it would go a ways to righting this ship. Let's ask Lisa. Have you looked at that kind of thing?
But it doesn't do anything about the white officers that have an issue, Joan.
Well, I know, but the thinking is that as time goes on, working in, making it more equitable, hiring more officers of color, and that along with the training. Lisa, what do you think?
Well, first of all, Pam, I not only hear but empathize strongly with your frustration, and you couldn't be more right. There are differences in how youth interact with law enforcement as a function of their race and the officer's race. And it is extremely disturbing to see the differential use of force, the differential use of arrest by race. I would say that if you are doing a training well, you are addressing that head on. And that is something that we try to do in our trainings. We created strategies for youth trying to avoid taking the path of lawsuits, but we were very much informed by lawsuits, which require that an agency demonstrate it has trained its officers, it has provided policies, and it rigorously supervises its officers to adhere to the policies, adhere to the training. And then you have a trifecta of stool legs that create a system of accountability. Right now, if you don't have any of that, it's very hard to hold anyone accountable and to get explanations for why one person is treated one way and another is treated another. I also want to say that recruitment issues are incredibly important in this. I think we have to be careful, though, not to assume that it is a straight line here, that everyone is white will be racist and everyone is black will not be racist to kids of color, because in my experience that hasn't always been the case either. I have seen very different outcomes sometimes that are disturbing too. So for all these reasons, we need to focus on this and make sure we're getting it right and getting folks in the community to see and say, yeah, we're seeing a difference, or yes, we want to be involved in what should be taught in these trainings and what should be considered in these policies. So I agree, and yet we don't see very much interest in really expanding these trainings. We see almost none at the state level to require that such training be part of all recruit academies and part of continuing training for law enforcement officers, or that scenarios be considered when officers are recruited. So at the state and local level, there's a lot to be done, and folks like you, Pam, I hope your voice is being heard loud and clear in Illinois, which is trying to make changes, because that's the only way things will change.
Lisa, I really want to thank you for being here. Lisa Thoreau and Shelley Jackson have written an article in Washington Monthly. I think it was posted August 10th. Police need to do a better job with young people. And they are both have senior roles at an organization called Strategies for Youth. Strategies for Youth, if you want to look it up. It's a national nonprofit, and its whole reason for being is to try to improve these interactions that police have with our young people, particularly young people of color, to try to make sure that the arrests that are made are really warranted, and to make sure that humane use of force policies are in place. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the radio and sharing these thoughts with us.
Joan, thank you for being concerned about this issue and giving time to it. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.